Good afternoon and happy March, everyone. The madness is getting a little bit closer. Welcome to Taking You to School, the only college basketball show on the RF Sports Radio Network. I'm your host, Joe Perrello of SweetSports.com. My colleague at Sweet Sports, Jeremy Conlin, could not be with us this week as he is a big-time ESPN blogger, and he is now enjoying the aftermath of the Sloan Sports Analytic Conference. Took place down the road from us at MIT. He got to shake Mark Cuban's hand. He said it smelled like money and strippers. Anyways, joining me is my faithful sidekick from one of the best basketball blogs on the net, Roundball Daily. He also contributes at Sheridan Hoops and Slam Magazine, Mr. Kells Dayton. How are things going over there in Connecticut, Kells?
Pretty good, Joe. You know, you can count on me. You know, Jeremy might go Hollywood on us. He might go big time on us. You can always count on me.
You're not going to big league me, are you?
No, I'll try nothing. I'm never too big for taking you to school.
All right, well, that's good. We are, you know, the best college basketball show on the net. And I guess we'll begin where we kind of have to. The biggest game of the day yesterday was obviously the Miami Hurricanes going into Cameron Indoor Stadium and taking on Duke. Two teams that are fighting for number one seeds. Miami looking to close out the ACC with a title, which will be their first ACC title ever. They took Duke down to the wire, but in the end it was a triumphant return from Duke's Ryan Kelly. The senior came back, dropped 36 on the Canes, and Duke pulled away at the end, 79-76. So, Kells, kind of two issues raised here. What does this say about Duke as a national title contender with Ryan Kelly back in the lineup? Obviously, we can't expect him to go for 35-plus every time out, but he's such a big part of what they do on both ends and such a great leader. Kells, you there? Kells, did we lose?
You there?
Yeah. Can you hear me now? I think we had a little technical glitch right there.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry about that.
Okay, no worries, no worries. Did you hear the question?
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, it's an unbelievable performance by Kelly, 36 points. They never could have expected that out of him, and he's been that was just an unbelievable comeback. It was like an Adrian Peterson-like comeback, almost something you never could have expected. But I think, you know, he's not going to do that every game, obviously. But, you know, getting him back in the lineup, I think, solidifies them as a national championship contender, especially this year when there's no clear-cut favorite. And if he's going to play like that, I mean, they definitely could be a team to beat. And you look at the fact that they won that game coming back. Obviously, the loss to Virginia hurts them, but it almost doesn't mean as much because, you know, the selection committee does look at, you know, injuries and things like that. So if Kelly's going to mean this much to them and they go out and finish the season strong, they could be looking at a number one seed here.
Yeah, and I will say I thought they were a little bit overrated all year without Kelly in the lineup. I thought they were a totally different team without him. But, my God, I didn't realize they were this much of a different team. I mean, they lost by, what, 30-something to Miami earlier in the year without him, and then they come out and beat the Canes with him. So, obviously, you know, he's a senior. Duke has always traditionally played well when they've had veteran teams that Coach K has been able to keep on the floor together for a couple years. Other side of the coin with that is Miami, and obviously they may be, I'll just come out and say, they're the best story in college basketball this season. This is a team that's never won the ACC. I believe they shared the Big East with Syracuse back in, what, 2000, something like that? But, you know, this is not a power program. You know, they can lock down at least a share of the ACC title with a win this week. They've lost two games pretty recently, but you still got to feel like this is a pretty dangerous team going into the tournament, don't you?
Well, I definitely think so, and I think that the game against Duke only reinforces that because, you know, you're playing in Cameron Indoor Stadium, which is probably, if not Allen Fieldhouse, it's probably the toughest place in the country to play. They still put up a great showing. You know, you look at Shane Larkin, had a big game, 25 points. You look at Scott, obviously great defensively, and those guys really, you know, stepped up and played well. And, you know, that three in the corner, if that goes down, we're going to overtime at the end of the game. So I think they you know, put up a good showing, and they proved that they belong. They are one of the elite teams in the country. And I think there's no question, you know, if this is a neutral site game, if Kelly doesn't go for 36, you know, maybe it's different again. I mean, if Kelly's not there, who knows? It could be another blowout without his contribution. So I think Miami's definitely legitimate.
Yeah, and this was one of those games where I think you had to come out feeling pretty good about both teams playing. you know, Miami playing on the road with Kelly coming back from after a 2-month hiatus, and he just goes crazy. So if you're Duke, you feel good that this guy can come out and show no rust and play so well. If you're Miami, you feel good that you can go to Cameron Indoor Stadium, like you said, one of the toughest places to play in the country, and guys like Shane Larkin can step up and play such great games. And Shane Larkin, boy, what a season he's had for the undersized guard. It's just been an amazing run for Miami, and you know, if you're a Hurricane fan, you've got the coach with the NCAA tournament pedigree. You've got a ton of experience. This team has deep tournament run written all over them.
Right. I mean, Jim Larranega could be National Coach of the Year with what he's done. He's an unbelievable coach. Have you seen the pregame locker room speeches that he gives? I mean, you just want to run through a wall with that. He's unbelievable, unbelievable motivator. And he really could be the National Coach of the Year, I think. He's just done a terrific job there. I mean, who would have thought Miami, coming out of absolutely nowhere this season, who would have thought that they would be, you know, a Final Four contender? And I think Larkin's been really the key to that, 25 points again yesterday. And I think he's done a terrific job leading that team.
Yeah, I certainly can't think of anybody who's done a better coaching job than Larranega this year. But, you know, again, amazing story for the Canes. We'll move on to a slightly different story, a very interesting story, out of the Big East. And things are about to get real confusing. As you know, schools like Pittsburgh, Syracuse, Rutgers, Louisville, they're all jumping ship from the Big East in the next year or two, largely due to football TV revenues. And that's going to leave us with the Catholic Seven schools, as they're calling themselves. And they've made their intentions to leave and start their own basketball-focused conference. But they're still left in the Big East right now with Big East mainstay Connecticut, Conference USA Transfer Cincinnati, and South Florida, who nobody seems to want right now. Basically, the Catholic Seven, they want out, but they want the name Big East, and they want to play their postseason tournament in Madison Square Garden, which is kind of, you know, one of the crowning achievements of the Big East, that great postseason tournament that they put in so long ago. The Catholic Seven schools, which include Georgetown, St. John's, DePaul, Marquette, Villanova, Providence, Seton Hall, it looks like they're going to look to add Butler and Xavier from the Atlantic 10, two really good basketball programs. And then there's another school rumored to be Creighton that they would add, another pretty solid program. Kels, I know you're a Big East guy. What do you kind of make of all this? Does the Catholic Seven have the right to keep this name? You know, the Big East, the old Big East now, I don't know, the conference formerly known as the Big East, they're going to get a bunch of Conference USA teams like Central Florida and East Carolina. What do we make of all this? Is it fair or foul, and what do we call the old Big East now?
That's a great question. I mean, I don't know what to call the old Big East, but to be honest with you, Joe, I do think it is fair because you look at the new teams that are coming in here, they have no Big East history with the name and the tradition playing in Madison Square Garden. I understand that that's the reason why they did come into the Big East, but, you know, I mean, when I think about the Big East, and I grew up in Connecticut, loved the Big East, used to go to the Big East tournament every year. It's just an absolute shame what's going to happen to it, and especially for UConn. I mean, it's just an absolute – it's terrible for them to be losing games against Georgetown, Syracuse, Louisville. I mean, those are the games that you live for as a Big East basketball fan. But, you know, when you look at them taking the name, you know, and trying to play in Madison Square Garden, I think, you know, one of the main reasons for that was because of St. John's, especially when they were good back in the day when you look at Chris Mullen when he was there, and even towards Ron Artest's years when he took them to the Elite Eight. So I think it is fair that they do, you know, keep the name. When I think about the Big East, I'm not thinking about SMU and you know, South Florida, Cincinnati. I'm thinking about Georgetown. I'm thinking about Providence. I'm thinking about Seton Hall. So, you know, I think it's fair. I think they should keep the name. I would love to see UConn be able to play basketball in that league and maybe play football in the other league. I'd love to see that happen. Probably won't happen, but I think, you know, it's going to be interesting. And as far as how good they can be as a league, I still think they can be, you know, a legitimate league, maybe a little bit better than the Atlantic 10. I still think you look at programs like Marquette, which has done an amazing job, 12-4 this year in that league, especially with Buzz Williams. He's done a great job. So I think it can be a viable conference. And, you know, I'd hate to see the ACC take over Madison Square Garden because as a Big East fan growing up, there was nothing better than that tournament.
Yeah, I agree. It's the crown jewel of postseason tournaments, if you will. And, you know, you look at this league, like you said, there's a lot of Big East history in this league. And I think, like you said, schools like Marquette, Georgetown, Seton Hall, Providence, St. John's, they've all been good at one point or another. So there's no reason to think that this couldn't be a very good basketball league. And then you add Xavier, who's had the recent success, and obviously Butler, who's been the mid-major surprise, although I don't think we can call them a surprise anymore, but they've made two runs to the championship game. Let's just say it's not going to be an easy league. It's going to be better than this year's SEC, I would think.
Right. It's not hard to be better than this year's SEC, but
yeah.
Still.
Yeah, well, we'll get to this year's SEC in a little bit. My question to you, what do you think in all this conference realignment and expansion, things like that, where do you think ultimately a school like Connecticut, who has a very, very good basketball tradition, an up-and-coming of sorts football program, and Cincinnati with pretty good basketball, pretty good football, certainly not dominant either one. I mean, those two schools have to be pretty attractive to conferences like the ACC, which is probably going to look to expand. The Big 12 would probably like to get back to 12 at some point, so why wouldn't they suck up Cincinnati? Do you see them maybe ending up in one of these leagues, or do they go independent? What can you do at this point?
I mean, that's going to be the main question, I think, for UConn right now, and Cincinnati also. But, I mean, I think they've got to hope that someone extends the invitation, because this is not what any of these guys had in mind, you know, when they're bringing some of these teams from Conference USA in. And, you know, at this point, I mean, there's nothing much you can do. It seems like it's out of everyone's hands, and, you know, everyone's chasing the money. It just seems like it's so out of control that, you know, it's just, you know, where the dominoes fall. So I think they've got to be hoping for that invitation. I think UConn obviously now makes sense for the ACC. I'm not sure, you know, if they do expand, if they decide to look at UConn first, I think they should. I think, you know, UConn would be more attractive than Cincinnati in that spot. Mm-hmm. But the whole thing is it's just a complete shame. It's just become basically, you know, a Hunger Games of sorts. It's out of control. And I mean, what can you do about it? It's ridiculous.
Yeah, and then you seem to have the Rick Pitino attitude that football money is killing college basketball.
Well, I think there's no question it is. And I think the other thing about it is, you know, these schools are making so much money off of these kids. At some point, there's going to be a revolution where, I mean, they're going to have to get paid. Because before you could hide behind the mask of the fact that, oh, this is, you know, amateur athletics, you know, it's college basketball is different, it's a different entity, we're not necessarily going after the big dollars. But with this it's so blatantly obvious what's going on here, how can they hide behind that anymore? I think, you know, at some point they've already, you know, they can't put the genie back in the bottle here, and at some point it may end up that we're going to have to start paying the players.
Well, you know, some programs already do that, so we'll call them ahead of the curve. We won't get into that now, but let's move on to a slightly more positive subject. It's March. Happy March, Kels. We're 2 weeks away from Selection Sunday. It's hard to believe Selection Sunday is that deep into March, but we're 2 weeks away from Selection Sunday. Let's talk about bubble teams, because that's at this time of year, that's everybody's worried about bubble teams, and every time they lose, everyone freaks out, even though by their almost definition, these are teams that are losing once a week in conference play, because that's why they're on the bubble. When you look at who are you looking at across the country as some bubble teams that really need to pick up some wins in these last two or three games that they've got on their schedule?
Well, I think the first team, obviously, that you have to go to is Kentucky in the SEC. Mm-hmm. Obviously, they've been up and down, and they're going to be the highest profile bubble team this year. I think, obviously, with their game on Saturday with them losing to Arkansas, I think that was obviously a big loss for them. I think they're still in decent shape. You know, they got the game against Florida at home on March 9th. I wouldn't be surprised to see them win that one and maybe get back in there. You look at their conference record, they're 11-5 in the SEC.
Yeah.
I mean, usually that would get you into the tournament as a lock pretty much, but this year's SEC obviously is awful. So I think they're an interesting team. I think you look at Ole Miss yesterday, losing to Mississippi State. That is one of the worst losses that you could possibly think of. They have been absolutely dreadful, Mississippi State, this season. So I think those two teams are certainly interesting. I think there's some teams that aren't getting respect. When you look at St. Mary's, what they've done, this year. Matthew Dellavedova, a great guard in that conference. Obviously, they've got a great conference record when you look at 14-2, 26-5 overall. I know they haven't beaten anybody, and they've got some, you know, questionable losses. They lost the Pacific early in the year, lost to Georgia Tech. But I do think they've gotten better over the course of the year. And, you know, they've won something like 17 out of 18 games. The only game they lost was Gonzaga. So they're an interesting team. I think they should be in the tournament. But I think those are the two main teams that I'm looking at. And then, obviously, there's some teams like Indiana State in that Missouri Valley Conference. They've got some good out-of-conference wins when you look at. They beat Mississippi, beat Miami, which is something they're really hanging their head right now. And they've got some good players as well. So it's interesting. I think the bubble is kind of wide open at this point. I think there's a lot of teams on there, and it's gonna be really interesting to see what happens over these next couple of weeks.
Oh, yeah, most definitely. And obviously having the four extra teams makes that bubble even wider. And like you said, I'm looking at the SEC, and I almost feel like the entire conference is on the bubble outside of Florida. You know, you look at Kentucky, they go down to Arkansas, tough place to play and lose. Tennessee was kind of the hot team in the conference. They get cooled off by Georgia. Alabama, you know, forgivable loss at Florida, but Alabama really needs to pick up a marquee win here at some point. To me, I got to think Tennessee and Arkansas are kind of out of it at this point. Ole Miss, like you said, that was a terrible, terrible loss, but, you know, they've still got some chances left to impress the committee. I look at that Alabama at Ole Miss game as a big one, kind of a knockout game. And then, like you said, you know, Kentucky and Florida, that's a big, big chance for the Wildcats to prove themselves.
Right, and I think it's going to be fascinating, really, with this SEC tournament, because you look at Arkansas, and you would think at this point that they're out, even though that was a big win yesterday. But what if they make a run to the semifinals? I mean, are you putting them in at that point? I mean, that could be really interesting. And then also, I mean, who's going to make – if someone makes a run to the SEC championship game out of one of those bubble teams, let's say Alabama makes that kind of run, I think they're going to get put in. So I think two or three teams will probably make it. I know Missouri, a lot of people are talking about them as a lock, and I think they probably are at this point. But I think, you know, two or three bids, and that's it out of the SEC. So it could be that tournament could be interesting.
Yeah, the SEC, the worst major conference since last year's Pac-12. But we'll move on from there to this year's Pac-12. And you talked about Missouri. You know, they're not a team that comes to everyone's mind as a power, but we're kind of thinking them as being in right now. Let's start out west. We haven't talked a lot of Pac-12 on this show. Who right now, the Pac-12 isn't exactly a standout conference either. I gotta believe Oregon and UCLA are in, but outside of them, Cal has some good wins. Arizona has some good wins, but all these teams seem to have bad losses. Who in the Pac-12 do you think is in at this point?
Well, I think you're right. I think Oregon, UCLA. I gotta put Arizona in at this point. 23-6. I think they've probably done enough, obviously, to be a lock at this point. Cal is a really interesting team. 20-9 right now. 12-5 in the conference. They do have some questionable losses when you go back. Lost three in a row to Wisconsin, UNLV, and Creighton. Lost to Harvard, which is not, you know, that's a pretty awful loss right there. But, you know, I think, you know, last year Colorado made that run out of the Pac-12, which was very interesting. They were not in the tournament at all last year until they made that run and won the Pac-12 championship out there in L.A. So I think, again, it's gonna come down to that tournament. But at this point, I would say – there's only four that are locks. I think Oregon, UCLA, Cal, and Arizona. The rest of them are on the bubble, and I'm not sure there is another team that is in right now.
Okay. All right, let's move over a little bit east and go to the Big 12. Obviously, Kansas has really come on strong of late. They're tied up at the top of the standings with Kansas State, who they blew out the last time they faced them. So you got to believe Kansas is the best team in that conference. And after a little bit of a couple losses by the Canes and some other shakeup, they might be staring at a number one seed. But outside of them, who is a lock for the tournament in the Big 12?
Well, I think obviously Kansas State, outstanding this year, 24-5, 13-3. They could be a top 10 team in the next poll. I think they've done a terrific job. That buzzer beater at Baylor yesterday was pretty awesome. I think Oklahoma's right there on the bubble. Oklahoma State obviously is in. Oklahoma, Iowa State, Baylor, those are the teams that you're looking at on the bubble. Oklahoma's 10-6 in conference. Iowa State's 9-7. Baylor's 8-8. I think Baylor's on the outside looking in at this point. And I think that you look at Iowa State, I think they probably have done enough to get in. That would have been a huge win if they would have gotten it against Kansas at Hilton. I think it was on Monday. So that would have been big. That was an overtime game. They did lose to Oklahoma at Oklahoma. Oklahoma State is coming up on March 6th for them, so that could be a really big game for them as well. But the locks, I would say Kansas, Kansas State, Oklahoma State, and Oklahoma, Iowa State, and Baylor are sitting on the bubble right now.
Yeah, and Iowa State's been really good at home this year. It's going to be interesting to see what they can do on a neutral court and all these different things. You know, because the committee, they almost look for those marquee road wins. You know, what can you do for me on the road? Because obviously in the tournament, you're not playing at home. So
right, it's
a little bit of a different animal. Let's move over a little bit. We talked about the ACC, the top teams. You got obviously Miami and Duke. North Carolina, man, they've kind of bounced back from a slow start. They look like they're in at this point. Virginia probably looks like it's going. Am I crazy to think that North Carolina State's also going? And, you know, Maryland has some good wins to their name. They've been, you know, up and down in conference play. But this league seems like it's got, you know, five or six teams that we can safely assume are going to get in.
Right. I think you're right. I think Miami, obviously Duke. I think North Carolina's in 10-5. They've done a great job. Roy Williams has done an excellent job. If it wasn't for Jim Larrañaga, he might be considered as one of the coaches of the year in that conference. And NC State's interesting, Joe, because you look at the last month, and they really haven't done anything special.
No.
When you really look in league play, they had that win over Duke, but that's pretty much it right now. So you look at them, they lost to Wake Forest, which is a bad loss, one-point loss on the road at Maryland. You look at them obviously losing at North Carolina, which is not a terrible loss, but they're going to have to take some care of some business in their next three games. They got at Georgia Tech, then they are home for Wake Forest, and then they go down to Tallahassee for Florida State. So they're not in, I don't think, at this point. I think it's going to depend, obviously. As we go further in the season, obviously the games get bigger. So for them, I think the rest of the season is going to be huge. I like Maryland a little bit more right now. They do have that head-to-head win over NC State. And they do have some great wins. I mean, they beat Duke at home, which is a nice win for them. Obviously, you take a look at earlier in the season, they had a huge run where they won about 16 games in a row. So they've got some good wins, and I think it's going to be interesting to see what happens to them in the conference tournament as well.
Yeah, I got to tell you, I really like Maryland. After watching them play Duke and Alex Len and the dominance that he had in that game, shooting up everyone's draft board. I mean, a 7-footer that can score like that and with that kind of skill. I think when you have a weapon like that, you're always an interesting team come tournament time, because when he's on, how do you stop that, you know?
Yeah, that's very true. I mean, those are the type of teams you look at to make a run, a team with a guy who has a big-time draft pick. So I think they could be if they get in, they could be dangerous.
Yeah, most definitely. We'll move over to your conference, the Big East. Nobody has been hotter than the Georgetown Hoyas. And Otto Porter and their big overtime or double overtime win a couple days ago. You know, the Hoyas are on fire. And, you know, last week you said that you still thought Syracuse was more built for a deep run. The Orange aren't exactly holding up their end of the bargain for you. You know, I'm looking at Georgetown, Louisville, Marquette, Pitt, and Syracuse, and Notre Dame. All probably in, I think, Connecticut. Well, I don't know. I'll go to you on where you think the cutoff is in that tournament. I think Connecticut's probably done enough to get in. They're going to be a 20-some win team by the end of it. What do you think right now?
Well, UConn, I think they should. They would have been in if they could make it. Obviously, they have the
probation.
But, I mean, I think you look at this league, I think you're right. I think that really is where the cutoff is. I think Villanova, 8-8. In the league, 9-8 actually in the league, 18-12 overall. You know, they're probably the most fascinating team when you look at Villanova. I think they have obviously some great wins with the win over Syracuse and Louisville, but that loss to Seton Hall is just not a good loss. It's kind of like the Mississippi State loss for Ole Miss.
Yeah,
it's a really bad loss. They lost at Pittsburgh, which, you know, can't blame them for that. But at some point, you got to win some of these games. If they lose to Georgetown at home on March 6th, I think that could be the death knell for them. I think Cincinnati's probably done enough to get in. 20-9 overall, they have some good wins. And another team that's coming on strong right now, Joe, could make a run here. I'm looking at Providence.
Don't give me the Friars.
I'm telling you. They do have some bad losses. That loss at Syracuse was awful, but that win over St. John's was a big win for them on March 2nd. And I think they could make a run. They've been coming back. They weren't healthy early in the year, and they did lose a lot of games. They didn't have Chris Dunn. But I think you look at them now, they're as talented as some of these other teams like Villanova and Cincinnati. If they win out and they make a run in the Big East tournament, they could sneak in there.
You know, I'd like to believe you because I like watching the Friars. I think they're a fun team. Like you said, Chris Dunn, the freshman point guard, is really exciting. They've got a really, really nice athletic front court. They're kind of a sweeper in that conference. And you know what? If they can bring back all their non-seniors, all the juniors that would come back, along with obviously they have the high-profile shooting guard, Ricky Lito, who's sitting out this year as a partial qualifier. You know, that's a team to be reckoned with next year. But, you know, I think they had their chance. If they could have shocked Syracuse at the Carrier Dome last week, then I think they'd still be in the conversation because they'd have that marquee win. But I think right now, unless they get to the finals of the Big East tournament, I don't see them getting in. But you're right about that. They're definitely a team to watch.
They don't have many big wins, and that could hurt them. But I think, you know, it's been a great job by Ed Cooley bringing them back to 500 in conference. Mm-hmm. And I think if the committee looks at the fact that they did have people hurt early in the year, it could work in their favor. It's a big bubble, Joe. We got to get 68 teams in there, so got to find a way.
That's true. And you know what? You could do a lot worse than Providence. They're a fun team, and, you know, I wouldn't want to play them in the first round. So there's no doubt about that. Well, we're running out of time already. You know, Kelsey, we don't even need Jeremy. We're running through this stuff so quick. We've only got a couple minutes left. We'll go to the Big Ten and just give me your cutoff point real quick. Indiana, Michigan State, Ohio State, Wisconsin, Michigan, they're all in. I think Minnesota, obviously the big win over Indiana. Illinois is another one of those kind of mid-level Big Ten enigmas, but I think they're in at this point. I don't know. I think there's a pretty big drop-off after that to teams like Iowa and Purdue that I just can't see making the tournament. I mean, obviously, Purdue's not even 500. But Iowa would be the one team. Maybe you could say Illinois is on the bubble, but where's your cutoff in the Big Ten?
I think you're exactly right. I mean, I think Iowa's probably the only bubble team. And, you know, there's only 7-9 in the conference, but obviously being such a tough league this year, they probably have to do some more, probably have to make some noise in the Big Ten tournament to get in. But I think they are the one bubble team, and I would not be shocked if they got in, if they made, you know, won a couple games in that Big Ten tournament. I think they're a decent team. I like what Fran McCaffrey's done. They've got some good players, so I wouldn't be shocked to see them make it.
Okay, fair enough. All right, Kels, we're going to let you squeeze this in. I know you want to talk about National Players of the Year. We got about 2 minutes left. I know you're a big fan of Marcus Smart. Obviously, there's going to be those two IU guys, Cody Zeller and Victor Oladipo, who – I think Oladipo is the classic. He's so underrated, he's overrated at this point. Like, I don't think anybody was talking about him at the beginning of the year. But now I think he's, you know, we're talking about him like he's Michael Jordan or something. I think he's a very good player, and he certainly deserves to be in the conversation. But who are your, let's say, top two or three guys that you would consider for National Player of the Year?
I think you're right. I think you got to look, obviously, at the two Indiana guys. And I think Oladipo maybe has gotten a little bit too much credit over the past, you know, couple of weeks when he's become kind of the front runner in the National Player of the Year conversation.
Yeah.
I think, you know, he's averaging 14 points a game, 6 rebounds. But you look at some of the numbers, I mean, obviously Trey Burke has been outstanding for Michigan, 18.8 points, 6.9 assists per game. Otto Porter has come out of nowhere. I think he could be a guy that maybe if he had a little more publicity early in the season, you know, he might have been able to get up there and taken that National Player of the Year position away. And I also think, you know, you look at Marcus Smart, I know obviously they like to have a team that is a top 10 team, top 5 team, but he's really been a do-everything player for Oklahoma State. So I think those three guys, I think you got to look at Mason Plumlee. If I had to pick it right now, you know, I'd probably go with Oladipo, but I think there's still obviously a lot of basketball left to be played, and I think it's interesting. I think it's going to be an interesting race.
You know, I got to say, my favorite guy to watch is Otto Porter. I think people just bounce off him when he takes the ball off the dribble, and, you know, he can get to the basket at will. He's a pretty good, you know, he's got a pretty good range on his jump shot. And when it's winning time, he just seems to sense that and kind of take over for a Georgetown team that is a little bit otherwise offensively challenged. We got 15 seconds left. I guess we got to get going. thank you to all you folks for tuning in. For Kells Dayton of Round Ball Daily, I'm Joe Perrello of SweetSports.com. If you can't get enough college hoops, big game on CBS in about a half hour, Michigan State. Enjoy the madness of March, everybody. We'll see you next week. Bye.